Hey, Prime members, you can listen to CBS Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Whether you're running errands, on your daily commute, or even at home, you can enjoy all your audio entertainment in one app, the Audible app. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. This includes the latest bestsellers and new releases. Plus, get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and more. If you've been wanting to form good habits, break bad ones, and improve motivation, Atomic Habits, written and narrated by James Clear, is a great listen. It'll reshape your mindset on progress and success by helping you develop strategies to transform your habits. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500 to try Audible for free for 30 days. That's WONDERYPOD. audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500 to try Audible for free for 30 days.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Good morning. Happy Father's Day. I'm Jane Pauley, and this is Sunday Morning. Long before the age of streaming and cable, many of us got our news and entertainment from just three TV networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC. Hard to believe, no? But every Sunday night, there was just one place to be, right here on CBS, because that was the place to see some of the biggest names and, on occasion, some of the strangest acts in all of show business, brought into America's living rooms by a somewhat wooden, hardly made for television host named Ed Sullivan. 75 years since his program made its debut, Tracy Smith remembers Ed Sullivan and his really big show.
Me on the Ed Sullivan Show?
Between 1948 and 1971.
We're gonna be on Ed Sullivan.
Being on the Ed Sullivan Show.
We got a real big show.
Often led to stardom.
Could Ed Sullivan make or break a career?
Absolutely. He opened doors and he gave people opportunities.
Ah, right there. There you go. Right.
What all the screaming was about, coming up on Sunday Morning. Tell you something.
No surprise that when the Beatles reached American shores, one of their first stops was Ed Sullivan. Most of us remember the screams and all the photos of the Fab Four. This morning, Anthony Mason tells us that one of the Beatles was taking some pictures of his own.
When the Beatles invaded America in 1964, Paul McCartney brought along his new Pentax camera.
And so I'd aim the camera and see where I liked it, you know.
Hundreds of his photographs from that trip were recently rediscovered in his archive.
It was lovely just to remember, oh my God, we went to America and we looked like that.
Sir Paul McCartney, ahead on Sunday Morning.
As you've probably heard,
recent months have turned a complicated question about children and gender identity from a personal and family matter into a contentious political controversy. We asked our Susan Spencer to take a closer look.
This 9-year-old was born, by all appearances, a boy. And kids like her are the faces of America's latest culture war.
How is it to be working through all this in the current environment in terms of political decisions that are being made about these therapies?
It often feels like an attack on our family.
The battle over medical care for transgender kids, later on Sunday Morning.
We'll have those stories, along with Jim Axelrod's tale of a daughter making good on her late father's bucket list. Ben Tracy has word of a very different path to the afterlife, human composting. A story from Steve Hartman, humor from our favorite dad, Jim Gaffigan, and more. It's a Sunday morning for Father's Day, June 18th, 2023, and we'll be back after this.
Achieving optimal mental health is a journey. Cerebral is here to help you find a trusted care team. We make your commitment to better mental health easy, completely online, personalized matching with licensed and credentialed therapists and prescribers, and schedule appointments that are flexible on your time. Cerebral's Strong Start package allows you to save up to $160 when you buy 2 or 4 months of care in advance, depending on plan selection. Let's do this together. Make a strong start to a better you. Get started at Cerebral.com/Wondery. That's Cerebral.com/Wondery.
Your milkshakes cost way less than before. Join Uber One to save way more. It's a membership that's better than your Save on Rides and Eats and so much more. Like pizza straight to your door and cold beers that you can pour. Potato chips from your favorite store when you're watching all your team score.
Join Uber One. Members save on Uber and Uber Eats. Get that stuck in your head. $0 delivery fee and percentage off discounts subject to order minimums and participating stores. Taxes and other fees still apply. Alcohol in select cities. 21 plus to purchase.
He brought us Elvis, the Beatles, and a famous talking mouse. The Ed Sullivan Show was an American institution for more than 2 decades. Tracy Smith remembers the man who made Sunday night special.
You ain't nothing but...
When he first appeared on The Ed Sullivan Show in 1956, Elvis Presley had yet to earn the nickname the King of Rock and Roll. But Ed Sullivan was very much a kingmaker.
Could Ed Sullivan make or break a career?
Absolutely.
Producer-director Andrew Solt, who owns the Ed Sullivan Archives, says 60 million people watched that Elvis appearance. Well, you ain't never gonna ever have your hand. Sullivan had been reluctant to put Elvis on at first, but ended up booking him for 3 shows,
ready to rock and roll.
Giving him a record-breaking $50,000. And what may have been even more valuable, his blessing.
That this is a real, decent, fine boy. We want to say that we've never had a pleasanter experience on our show with a big name than we've had with you.
Truth is, if you made it on The Ed Sullivan Show, there's a good chance you could make it big anywhere. The show premiered 75 years ago, June 20th, 1948, and for more than 2 decades, it was appointment TV.
Oh, yes. Yes. Every Sunday at 8 o'clock, my house would be quiet. I mean, watching Ed Sullivan, that was a glorious event.
Otis Williams and his group The Temptations were on the show 6 times.
When it's cold outside.
How do you look?
We look good. Scared, but yeah, we were scared.
Oh, such wonderful golden memories to see this.
Could you see the impact in record sales and in tour bookings, yeah?
Yes. The record would shoot up the charts real quick.
Well, she just dared me to come down here and this.
And it wasn't just great music.
Did you ever see legs like that? Oh, Twiggy, get me an olive.
The Ed Sullivan Show had a little something for everyone. A variety show that featured comedians.
I didn't want to buy this dress. Made me buy this.
Ballet dancers.
I could have danced all night.
Scenes from Broadway shows. Plate spinners.
Here is Jackie Robinson.
Athletes.
Suppose I were to box you, how far would I go?
Well, Ed, if you run, I'll have to cut it to one.
One
punch.
No!
Muppets.
Give me a kiss goodnight.
And an affectionate puppet from Italy.
I'd be glad to.
You know, Topo Gigio was on over 50 times. America fell in love with that sweet little mouse.
Thank you very, very much. Tonight we got a real big show.
Ed Sullivan himself was an unlikely TV star. He started as a newspaper columnist who spent his nights in theaters and clubs.
And he had an ability to not only find the talent, but the public trusted his taste, and he became so powerful.
This was a live show. Explain the challenges that went with that.
Well, anything could go wrong, and often it did.
Like his intro to actor Dolores Gray.
Now, in our audience tonight is one of the fine singing stars of Broadway, now starving. You're not, actually.
And people loved those little fumbles.
They loved it.
Live from the Ed Sullivan Theater on Broadway.
Sullivan didn't sing or tell jokes.
You've been a wonderful audience.
In fact, he rarely smiled, something CBS News pioneer Edward R. Murrow once asked him about.
Ed, where did you get this reputation as a stone face, anyway?
I don't think as a youngster I had it, but when I got the first time I went into television, the minute the cameras came barreling in on me, rigor mortis set in.
Ed Sullivan even presented comedians who did impressions of Ed Sullivan.
Now, before you meet young Robert Goulet.
Which reflected who he was. He had a sense of humor about himself. And it endeared him to the public.
All of us in the country and Canada, all of us sympathize with your terrible grief.
But with enormous success came unwanted attention. Sponsors, especially in the South, contacted CBS.
He was told that he had too many black acts on.
They literally said that.
They literally said that. And he said, well, I'm booking the show. I'm not answerable to you.
As co-founder of The Temptations, Otis Williams was accustomed to racism.
We were touring the South, and we literally got shot at. Yeah.
So for Ed Sullivan to say, I'm going to put on who I want to put on.
That is. That's what he did. Not only The Temps, Supremes, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder. He crossed the color barrier. He just didn't have it relegated to white folks only.
Sullivan's goal was simple. Present the best talent the world had to offer.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
So it's not surprising the Ed Sullivan Show was where this little group from Liverpool made their first live U.S. TV appearance.
They put on the screen the names so that everybody at home knew who Paul was, who George was, who Ringo was, and when it came to John, but I never heard it say, they said, sorry girls, he's married.
One of those girls was 13-year-old Debbie Gentler.
Mm-hmm. Ah! Is
right
that
there,
you?
There you go, right there.
You know what? There was so much screaming, I really did not hear the Beatles. But I was not there to hear the Beatles. I was there to see them be in the same room and take in the same air that they were breathing.
Do you remember anything about Ed Sullivan?
When Ed came on the stage, he immediately tried to quiet everyone down.
That work?
No. No.
As the 60s came to an end, TV viewing habits started to change. And in 1971, The Ed Sullivan Show was canceled.
You know, the truth was, the show was still very strong in the talent, but Ed was getting a little, I think, tired, and he was heading for 70.
How did he take it?
It broke his heart. He didn't like the way it came down. He lived for Sunday at 8.
Ed Sullivan died 3 years later in 1974. He left behind more than 1,000 hours of shows on film and videotape. In 1990, Andrew Solt bought the archive for a sum he'll only hint at today.
Millions?
Yes, many millions.
Many millions.
And we borrowed it all. And we spent all our life savings trying to get it. I was scared, but it worked out great.
We want future generations to watch it.
Andrew's son Josh joined his father's business a few years ago and is now CEO of Sofa Entertainment in LA. They've reimagined The Ed Sullivan Show for DVDs, social media, and streaming, vastly improving the video and sound.
There are 69 Billboard number one hits performed on The Ed Sullivan Show. There are 73 artists who appeared on The Ed Sullivan Show who are now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So it's just an unbelievable amount of talent.
Younger generations may know Ed Sullivan as simply the name on a theater in New York City, former home of David Letterman's show and now Stephen Colbert's. But the Saults see The Ed Sullivan Show as a treasure chest with more gems yet to be revealed.
It's brought such joy to us, and now, honestly, we're trying to share that joy because it's going to live long after us. What's amazing to me is we're still finding stuff.
Are you still finding stuff? How long do you think that's going to go on?
I think till I drop.
Hi, I'm Lindsey Graham, host of Wondery's podcast, American History Tellers. We take you to the events, times, and people that shaped America and Americans, our values, our struggles, and our dreams. In our latest series, Union Victory in the Civil War ends centuries of slavery and begins the era known as Reconstruction. The federal government begins the difficult task of restoring a shattered Union, and political leaders struggle to integrate millions of newly emancipated African Americans into a racially divided society. Black Americans fight for social and economic equality, but they soon encounter violence and political pushback. Follow American History Tellers wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
Is this thing on? Check, 1, 2, 1, 2. Hey, y'all. I'm Keke Palmer. I'm an actress, a singer, an entrepreneur, and a Virgo, just to name a few. Now, I've held so many occupations over the years that my fans lovingly nickname me Keke Keep a Bag Palmer. And trust me, I keep a bag, love. But if you ask me, I'm just getting started, and there's so much I still want to do. So I decided I want to be a podcast host. I'm proud to introduce you to the Baby This Is Keke Palmer podcast. I'm putting my friends, family, and some of the dopest experts in the hot seat to ask them the questions that have been burning in my mind. What would former child stars be if they weren't actors? What happened to sitcoms? Is OnlyFans only bad? I want to know, so I asked my mom about it. These are the questions that keep me up at night. But I'm taking these questions out of my head, and I'm bringing them to you. Because on Baby, This Is Keke Palmer, no topic is off limits. Follow Baby, This Is Keke Palmer wherever you get your podcast. Hey, Prime members, you can listen early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
On this Father's Day, Jim Axelrod is giving us a read on a new book, My Father's List, distributed by our corporate sibling, Simon & Schuster. It tells the story of a daughter, her dad, and a list of some pretty challenging unfinished business.
In her small apartment in Montclair, New Jersey, Laura Carney's dreams are coming true.
It's so cool to finally hold it in my hands.
Just like her father always knew they would, even if unaware of exactly the role he'd play.
Laura Carney, My Father's List, How Living My Dad's Dream Set Me Free.
Laura's first book was just published.
So weird.
A dream born of a nightmare 20 years ago.
And I remember thinking how angry I was that he didn't finish his life. You know, that he didn't get to do all the things he set out to do.
Mick Carney was killed in a car crash at the age of 54.
Was he a good dad?
Yeah. Oh, the best.
A sensitive, sentimental, and, like so many of our fathers, complicated man. Loving.
You're the best thing I've ever done.
You're the best thing I've ever done.
That's what he said all the time.
But he also left her a lot to sift through. Like when he split from her mom when Laura was just a girl.
When he left, when you were six, was there something you had to overcome?
Oh, of course. Of course. I believed he abandoned us for a long time.
So weird, his handwriting, right?
It's not easy. It's not easy to read.
What she's sifted through the last 6 years is a list of all those things Mick Carney set out to do. 60 items he wrote down when he was 29. He'd only had a chance to try 6 when he was killed.
What do you think the value of writing a bucket list is?
You know, not only are you writing down your intentions for your life, but you're also committing to showing the world who you are authentically. So even if you don't finish it, maybe your kids find it someday, and then they know what you cared about, and that matters. Things I would like to do in my lifetime.
When her brother found the list in 2016.
I couldn't help but notice talk with the president right away.
Talk to a president, correspond with the Pope, run 10 miles.
Swim the width of a river, surf in the Pacific Ocean.
She was intimidated.
And then I just got this image in the back of my mind of my dad's face smiling and nodding. That never happened before, so that was the thing that really made me feel like, oh, I need to do this.
But when she and her husband, Stephen, headed to Georgia and Jimmy Carter's Sunday service,
if you want a photograph, you can stay.
Daunted, turned to inspired.
So what happened?
I said, President Carter, my father wrote down that he wanted to meet you on his bucket list, and I'm checking that off for him today. And he said, oh, very good. This was the most impossible list item, and we did it. And I think everything changed after that, because if I could do the most impossible one, then what was to stop me from doing the rest?
Ever since, she's been checking them off.
Why are there so
many? Record five songs.
Songs about rainbows.
Sail by herself.
All right, here we go.
Skydive.
Was any part of you, as you would read this, be like, come on, Dad.
Like, yeah. But when I would be in the middle of doing them, I just had this feeling that my dad wouldn't let me fail.
Maybe the most challenging for this reluctant driver was hopping behind the wheel of a Corvette.
I took it slow, then I knew it was the same highway where my dad's crash had happened.
But the challenge was where the healing was.
I felt like I now could associate a new memory with driving. And the car phobia went away. Then all of a sudden, I was taking long trips and driving myself. I changed the narrative. My dad and I weren't victims of something anymore.
No, they weren't. With the help of her long-gone dad, Laura was learning to rethink her approach to life.
But underpinning this entire list is do things to enjoy doing them.
That's right, which not I wasn't doing.
Your dad was teaching you through this list that you derive pleasure from the doing, not how well you do it, from the doing of it.
It opened my heart, which had been shut down.
Chapter 12, Own a Black Tux.
So now Laura Carney is sharing what she learned by completing the list. How she made her connection to her father's memory 54 times tighter and found peace in the process.
So I'm not stuck in that day when he died anymore. Now I'm living in the present and I'm going and doing all these incredibly fun things. Everybody has that possibility to still have that connection, because even though people die, love is something that never dies.
We turn now to an issue of concern to parent and child, and increasingly the rest of us, as a private matter becomes more and more political. Here's Susan Spencer.
Meet Ava, an exuberant, happy 9-year-old.
My turn.
Perhaps it's a bit mind-bending to learn that she was born, by all appearances, a boy.
Even before she could talk, she gravitated towards all the girly toys and colors. And when she could talk, she would say, like, I wish I was a girl.
Her parents admit it was hard to process. Their then son begging in tears to wear a dress.
I feel like I'm an open-minded person, but when it's like your son, you know, asking you to do this, you know. And I think I wasn't thinking about her feelings at the time. I was just thinking about how are people going to react to
it. You were afraid, a little bit afraid for her.
Yeah, and I still am afraid for her.
But the North Carolina family, who asked that we not use their name, has learned to embrace a change they never saw coming.
You know, if we continued to say no, you have to live as a boy. She would continue, you know, she's young. I'm sure she would have done it, but like, we didn't want to be her first bully. We wanted to support her.
You like fashion?
Yes.
What do you like about it?
Just the way you can express yourself with it and how creative you can be with it.
And so Ava became Ava in the second grade.
Yes. She had to walk into her classroom and identify that, you know, she had a new name and pronouns, and she was so excited. It was like Christmas.
Your mom told me a really interesting story about when you were in the second grade and you introduced your friends to Ava. How was that?
It went well. They didn't treat me any different.
So now, are you who you think you should be?
Yeah, 100%.
100%, and that would be Ava?
Yeah.
It was just very clear, the difference in her, once she was allowed to present as a girl. She went from being shy and anxious to, everyone remarked, she was so much more confident. She just seemed happier.
About 10% of youth these days, we think, are identifying as gender diverse. They don't quite feel like the gender they were assigned at birth.
Dr. Meredith McNamara is an assistant professor of pediatrics at Yale University. She sees transgender teens in her medical practice.
Give me first a definition of transgender.
In general, it's an identity that's different from one sex assigned at birth.
0.6% of all Americans identify as transgender, about 300,000 teenagers. At least 121,000 trans kids have been diagnosed with something called gender dysphoria, severe distress, even suicidal thoughts related to their gender identity.
It is painful to live with gender dysphoria, and it really does need medical treatment. What we're looking at right here is the established criteria for diagnosing gender dysphoria in adolescents and adults.
The guidelines deal both with when to give puberty-blocking drugs, which stave off development and buy time, and when to prescribe sex hormones, which cause permanent changes in line with gender.
This is the most careful and thoughtful type of medicine I have ever practiced.
But Americans are split on whether minors ever should be offered any treatment. One Pew poll found 46% favored making it illegal, period. And since 2021, 20 states have enacted full or partial bans.
We want to see all of America protecting children from all gender-affirming care.
Terry Schilling is president of the American Principles Project, a conservative advocacy group that promotes bans on care for minors.
I think that adults transitioning is a totally different thing than children transitioning. Children don't know what they're going to be when they get older.
Explain to me why that is a decision that should be made by the state.
The state makes all types of decisions around our children. You have to be 21 years old to smoke cigarettes. You have to be 21 years old to drink. You have to be 18 years old to get a tattoo. But we're going to let children get cross-sex hormones?
What do you say to people who say, you know, what's the downside of just waiting at least until a child is 18?
If parents don't want to consent to this treatment, then they shouldn't. So the problem with waiting, if that young person is in serious distress, is that that distress is only going to get worse. And we do know that young people who qualify for gender-affirming care, desire it, and don't receive it, have high rates of depression, anxiety, suicide attempts, and even completed suicide.
This would have been after his suicide attempt when we just started to try to get help for him.
Ann Geddes knows firsthand what it's like to watch a trans child in a mental health crisis. Her son was born, as she puts it, biologically a girl back in 1988.
When he was 13, he became profoundly depressed. There was a suicide attempt, and he became a severe self-injurer. We tried to find new therapists. We tried new psychiatric drugs, and he never really seemed to get better.
Get his new hormone treatment was an option, but
prior to his turning 18, we would not approve it.
Why not?
Because we had it backwards. We were just absolutely of the belief that we couldn't take any permanent measures until he had his mental health problems sorted out.
Her son, who declined to be interviewed but supported his mother in speaking to us, started hormone therapy on his own at 19. And Geddes says The change was dramatic.
Literally from the time he started taking testosterone, the self-injury stopped. The depression started to alleviate. He was able to go back to school. He got his 4-year degree in computer science. He's married, and he's happy.
Your whole expression changed when you started telling me what he's like today.
Yeah.
Have you ever talked to him about the decision you made back then?
Yeah, he's very forgiving.
But he's acknowledging that there is something to forgive.
Yeah, yeah. That we, by not taking more drastic measures, we prolonged his suffering. And we could have lost him.
The parents of some of these children would look at you and say, if you want to protect kids, leave us alone.
We are leaving your kids alone. We are the ones that are protecting them from getting sex change procedures and puberty blocking and cross-sex hormones.
And they would say, we know better than you do.
And I would tell them they don't. And then we can just deal with it in politics. I am an American citizen that gets to vote and organize people in politics. When we both disagree, then we go to the American people and make our cases to them, and we see who can pass the most laws. And right now, we're starting to win.
Oh, me. Twizzlers. I think there's a Twizzlers down here. Yes.
But families like Ava's back in North Carolina don't see this as a matter of winning or losing. For them, it's a matter of surviving.
We are afraid that more restrictions are on their way, like we are seeing in other states, because, you know, here in North Carolina, lawmakers are kind of like seeing what will stick and what can be passed. And so it seems like we're gonna have to live in fear for a little while.
It's the end of life decision. All of us will eventually face whether to choose burial or cremation. Now, Ben Tracy tells us about another intriguing option.
In the garden of her home in Bellingham, Washington, Marie Eaton is always able to find something she lost.
When I come out to garden, he's there. And every time I'm under one of the maples, I think, oh yeah, Wayne, you're here.
Her brother, Wayne Dodge, was also an avid gardener with a fondness for Japanese maple trees. But in 2021, he fell down the stairs and became a quadriplegic. A few months later, the 71-year-old doctor got pneumonia.
As a physician, he knew what that meant. You know, they call pneumonia the old man's friend, and he chose that way to leave. And we were devastated to lose him, but understood that choice.
You were very close.
Very close to him.
Instead of being buried or cremated, Wayne had chosen a relatively new alternative, natural organic reduction, more simply known as human composting. It's a natural process that transforms the body into soil.
So I wanted to show you what the soil actually looks like. It's beautiful, like beautiful, beautiful mulch. At the end of the process.
Some of it is spread under the Japanese maples in her yard.
What do you say to people who will hear this and say, that just sounds a little creepy or a little strange?
So I might invite them to think a little bit about what traditional burial involves, which is embalming a body, putting it inside a lead-lined coffin, and putting it into a concrete vault in the ground. As though we were pretending the person's not dead. That to me is much more creepy than this process of naturally becoming part of the soil again.
For her brother, that process happened here at Recompose in Seattle, the first human composting facility in the country.
This is the gathering space.
Katrina Spade is the founder and CEO. She showed us the space where families can hold a memorial service as their loved one is covered with organic plant material such as straw and wood chips.
We typically have the person's body laid here, and at the end of the ceremony, we pass the person's body through the threshold vessel.
On the other side is this array of 8-foot-long stainless steel containers in which more natural material is added to aid in decomposition.
How long will this take for each individual body?
Well, everybody's different, but about 30 to 40 days inside the vessel. And we're creating this perfect environment to facilitate that transformation into soil. Bone at that point is reduced mechanically to sort of like a sand-like substance.
Spade is a former architecture student who was instrumental in Washington State becoming the first in the nation to legalize human composting in 2019. Five other states followed, and there are now a handful of companies offering this service. Human composting is considered an environmentally friendly choice, a way to minimize death's carbon footprint. Today, most Americans choose to be cremated or buried, which involves burning fossil fuels and toxic chemicals.
Do you find that the environmental footprint of this is part of what's driving some folks' decisions?
Yes. So if you've lived your whole life thinking about that and trying to make a difference environmentally, it makes sense, too, to think about your environmental impact after you die.
But the New York State Catholic Conference opposes the practice, saying it is more appropriate for vegetable trimmings and eggshells than for human bodies.
I know that this is an incredibly respectful process, and for so many people, it's more than that. It's deeply meaningful.
It is like giving your body back to nature.
Yeah, we truly get to be nature eventually.
Simple natural burials were standard until the Civil War, when soldiers were embalmed so their bodies could be returned to their families. Abraham Lincoln's funeral made the process popular, and luxurious caskets became the new standard. Human composting is one of the few innovations in death care in more than a century. About 300 people have used Recompose's services so far, which cost about $7,000. The soil created, which fills the bed of a pickup truck, can be taken by the family or donated to forest conservation efforts.
Wayne is all over Seattle, planted under many, many Japanese maple trees.
Marie Eaton's brother's soil was given to family and friends to sustain the trees he so loved. She finds comfort in knowing that his death continues to create new life.
Every time I come outside here and see the maples, I'm reminded of this wonderful, wonderful man.
It happened on Friday. The death of the man behind the notorious Pentagon Papers of the Watergate era, Daniel Ellsberg. Born in Chicago and educated at Harvard, Ellsberg was at the Rand Corporation in the 1960s when he was put on a top-secret study of U.S. policy in Vietnam. Outraged by its findings, which he later described as 7,000 pages of documents of lies and deceptions, Ellsberg decided to leak the report to the New York Times and later to the Washington Post. Ellsberg was charged under the Espionage Act and faced 115 years in prison. He also became a target of President Richard Nixon's infamous White House plumbers, who, it was later learned, broke into the office of his psychiatrist and even considered dosing Ellsberg with LSD right before a speech. Ultimately, charges against Ellsberg were dismissed because of government misconduct, and the Supreme Court would allow publication of the Pentagon Papers. In March, Daniel Ellsberg revealed he had terminal pancreatic cancer. He pledged to devote his remaining time to the, quote, urgent goal of working with others to avert nuclear war in Ukraine or Taiwan or anywhere else. Daniel Ellsberg was 92 years old. Father's Day is special for dads everywhere, particularly our Jim Gaffigan.
It's Father's Day. Every third Sunday in June, we honor all the men who have generously taken on the role of dad in some child's life. Today, these men will be the recipients of coffee mugs, neckties, and barbecue equipment, which they will cherish for at least a day. But what about the guys who don't have children? the men who've never volunteered to be a dad-like figure in someone's life. What do we even call these men? I mean, besides happy, lucky, or smart. On paper, being a father is a bad investment. Financially, emotionally, physically, mentally. I could go on. It's not surprising some men choose to not be a parent. It makes sense some guys would forgo eventually hearing their own teenage offspring whisper, "Can you act like you don't know me?" At times I envy these non-father men, but we can't compare these men to a father. Heck, I don't even think these men should be considered adults. How are these guys different from a pampered toddler, really? What, a driver's license, a bank account? What do these toddler men even do with their free time? They probably just call it time. Are there worries or concerns that keep these men up at night? What am I gonna have for breakfast? They probably just eat their breakfast in quiet. No screaming, no conflict, just quiet. Yeah, there's no comparison. One man has a rich, fulfilling life, and the other is a dad. So sorry, Father's Day is not for them. Those childless men will have to sit today out. Sure, they have other days, and yeah, there are 364 of those days, but not today. Today is Father's Day.
The Beatles!
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you.
That's the Beatles in 1964 on The Ed Sullivan Show. It was more a national event than a guest appearance. Happy 81st birthday to Sir Paul, who, Anthony Mason tells us, captured that special time by turning his camera on us.
Paul McCartney used his Pentax camera the same way he used his guitar, with total freedom.
Taking photographs, I'd be just looking for a shot.
Yeah.
And so I'd aim the camera and just sort of see where I liked it, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
And invariably, you pretty much take one picture.
3,000 screaming teenagers are at New York's Kennedy Airport to greet, you guessed it, the Beatles.
Early in 1964, the 21-year-old took his new camera on perhaps the most momentous musical journey of the 20th century. The Beatles' invasion of America.
I think we were moving fast.
Yeah.
So you just learned to take pictures quickly.
Hundreds of his photographs from that trip were recently rediscovered in McCartney's archive.
It was really nice. Number one, because I thought they were lost.
The images, collected in the new book, 1964, Eyes of the Storm, will be on view later this month at the National Portrait Gallery in London. The Beatles had started their trip in Paris.
And it was in Paris that we got the telegram. Congratulations, boys, number one in the US charts.
And you had said you won't go to America.
Yeah.
Unless you have a number one.
I know. And you know, that was pretty spunky to kind of think that. Yeah. But I'd seen quite a few of our major stars go to the States, and we're going, well, he's going to leave us now. He'll be famous over there. But then they'd come back, and they weren't famous. So I said, well, if we go over there, you know, I really don't want to come back with our tail between our legs.
In America,
ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
They played the Ed Sullivan Show. 73 million people would tune in. McCartney calls it the moment all hell breaks loose.
To look at those pictures, it's kind of you looking at the world looking at you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you seemed very comfortable with it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you gotta think about it. We're kids from Liverpool.
Yeah.
And we're trying to get famous. And it's not easy. And we were like stars in America. And people loved us. So we loved it. And having that number one was really the secret. Mm-hmm. Because if the journalists, you know, New York journalists, hey, Beatle, yeah. Hey, Beatle, what are you doing? Why? And we sort of say, why are you here? Why, you know, whatever. He said, we're number one in your country. Bingo.
McCartney captured the commotion on the streets around New York's Plaza Hotel and the crowd that chased them when they snuck out the side door.
There was one reporter who said you were like prisoners with room service.
Yeah, that was kind of true, but we liked room service. You know, we'd never had it before.
From New York, the Beatles traveled by train to Washington, D.C. McCartney's camera took the ride, too. So many of McCartney's pictures were taken on the move.
You shot that from your car.
Yeah, the policeman in Miami, he just pulled right up next to me. Mm-hmm. And that was basically what I saw. Mm-hmm. And we'd never seen policemen with guns. We just didn't have that in England.
But in Miami, McCartney broke out the color film.
For us, it was like going on holiday.
The Fab Four even had a few days off.
There's some great shots of all of you with, like, looked like terry cloth jackets.
Yeah, the hotel supplied them. You know, you normally get like a robe.
Yeah.
But this place, because it was Miami, yeah, had these little cool little short things and hats. We lived in them for days. Even Brian, our manager, we thought they were really cool items of clothing.
And here they are, fresh from their triumphant appearances in the United States.
The band went back home to England in late February. By early April, the Beatles had the top five songs on the U.S. charts. McCartney writes, "We spent the months and years after holding on for dear life."
Did you remember all of these when you saw them?
Kind of. It was a very memorable period.
Oh, you know, I'm sure. Yeah. But there was so much going on, I'm amazed you could process it and keep it all.
Yeah, so am I.
McCartney's not only looking back at photos of his past, but he announced last week to the BBC that this fall he'll be releasing what he says is the last Beatles record, a John Lennon demo tape that McCartney's remixing using the latest artificial intelligence technology. The music, like Paul McCartney's pictures, all part of the Beatles' enduring legacy.
So, you know, for me, it's like a little slice of American history.
Yeah.
And it's my history. It's the Beatles' history. So it was great to rediscover these pictures.
Steve Hartman this morning is catching up with an old friend.
From a desperate place across the Atlantic, a suspicious message went out. My name is Joel from Liberia, West Africa. I need some assistance from you, business or financial assistance, that will help empower me. And 6,000 miles away, a stranger answered.
I just wanted to go down this rabbit hole and see what were the tricks that they used to get people.
You were wrong about him.
So I took him for a scammer, but he showed me that there was a different side to him.
As we first reported in 2018, Ben Taylor of Ogden, Utah, befriended the stranger and helped him help himself. He worked with Joel to make a little booklet about his life.
And I sold it online to whoever was interested in the story or whoever was just interested in helping a guy out.
And from those sales, Joel was able to earn hundreds of dollars.
Is this your home?
Oh yeah, this is my home.
Ben even visited to see the results of their partnership firsthand.
Brand new roof.
That looks good, man.
Yeah.
As you might expect, after that story first aired, lots of people tried to seize on Ben's kindness. His spam folder blew up with supposedly desperate pleas. Like the woman in Cameroon who said she needed money for reconstructive plastic surgery. The same letter had been circulating on the internet for years. It was even posted on a scam reporting website.
But I read into her story and it felt like something that I couldn't ignore.
So you believe somebody again?
I did a lot of work to kind of get to the bottom of it.
Turns out the story is true. Chica Ordery had a botched surgery as a child that left her with intermittent but excruciating pain.
Hi, Chica Ordery.
So, a couple months ago.
It's me, Mr. Ben.
Ben did as he'd done before.
How are you?
Flew to see the woman so many others had written off as a scammer. And showed her the book.
This is the book
that would pay for her operation.
That you wrote.
It's just a lot of fun to see people kind of be the hero of their own story.
Hi, Chica Ordery. You look like someone who just got out of surgery.
Thanks to you, Mr. Ben.
Twice now, Ben Taylor has gone halfway around the world to help a stranger and inspire you. Not to go answer your spam mail, just open your mind to the possibility that some people may be better than you think.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Thank you for listening. Please join us when our trumpet sounds again next Sunday morning.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to CBS Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.